Hello, and welcome to the January IASB Update Podcast. I am Neely Shaw, the Executive Technical Director at the IASB, and today I am joined by the Chair of the IASB, Andreas Barco, as well as the Vice Chair of the IASB, Linda Mizon-Hutter. Welcome both.
Hi, Neely. Hi, Linda.
Hi, guys. I'm happy to join you.
Thank you. Well, as many of you are aware, Linda was recently appointed as Vice Chair of the IASB, having joined us as an IASB member in September 2022. So we're thrilled to have Linda join us for our IASB Update podcast, where we recap IASB decisions and discussions following IASB meetings each month. So in January, we discussed six projects. Let's just jump right into the first one: business combinations, disclosures, goodwill, and impairment. Now, just as a reminder to our listeners, this project was formerly known as our Goodwill and Impairment Project. We renamed it to give more prominence to the various aspects of the project, in particular disclosures. The purpose of the project is to provide users of financial statements with more useful information about business combinations, also known as mergers and acquisitions, that companies make at a reasonable cost. In attaining this objective, the IASB has been considering changes to disclosure requirements about business combinations, the subsequent accounting for goodwill, and other aspects of business combinations. The board is working on proposals for an exposure draft to consult with stakeholders. So still a little bit of ways to go before we finalize the work here. Andreas, we started this meeting by discussing exemptions from disclosure requirements. Could you kick us off with the IASB's discussions in this regard?
With pleasure, Neely. Let me start by providing a bit of background. As some of you may recall, in September 2022, the IASB tentatively decided to propose disclosures about the objectives and targets of a business combination in the year of acquisition, followed by disclosures about performance against those objectives in subsequent years. To balance user information needs and preparer concerns, the IASB also decided to propose an exemption in specific circumstances that will permit a company to not have to disclose about some of the IASB's proposed new disclosure requirements. Having made that tentative decision, this month we discussed how to design this exemption. More specifically, the IASB decided to provide a principle for the exemption. This principle would allow a company not to disclose a particular item of information if such disclosure would prejudice seriously any of the company's objectives for the business combination. We also decided to provide application guidance for deciding whether the exemption is applicable. So to provide more color to that, the guidance would, for example, require a company to consider the effect of disclosing the information and whether it is possible to disclose information at a sufficiently aggregated level to resolve concerns. The IASB also tentatively decided that a company would be required to disclose that it has used the exemption and why for each item of information to which the exemption applies.
Thanks, Andreas. Another aspect of the project we discussed was expected synergies. Our discussion was focused on the IASB's preliminary view requiring companies to disclose quantitative information about expected synergies from a business combination. Linda, could you elaborate more on that?
I'd love to, Neely. And I should start out by saying that what we mean by synergies are the positive impact on the combined business's results, often which results in goodwill. And that's what we mean. But let's also point out that the IASB's discussion on the expected synergy builds upon our tentative decision in September of 2022 to add a requirement for a company to disclose quantitative information about those expected synergies from a business combination in the year of acquisition. So this month, the IASB expanded on that decision by deciding that a company would be required to disclose quantitative information about expected synergies by category. For example, total revenue synergies, total cost synergies, and the total for each other type of synergy. Now, if this disclosure is sensitive and would qualify for the exemption Andreas just discussed, the company would be required to disclose information at an aggregated level to alleviate the concerns about sensitivity. And a company would be required to disclose when the benefits expected from the synergies are expected to start and how long they will last. Effectively, this disclosure would mean a company needs to identify whether the synergies are expected to be finite or indefinite.
Thanks, Linda. So at future meetings, the IASB will continue its discussion on these new disclosure requirements and also discuss potential changes to the impairment test for cash-generating units containing goodwill in IAS 36. And let's move on to the second project that we discussed, subsidiaries without public accountability disclosures. As many of you are probably aware, this project would permit some subsidiaries to apply the recognition and measurement requirements in full IFRS accounting standards with reduced disclosures. The project is seeking to save companies' cost without eliminating material information for investors by providing reduced disclosure requirements for subsidiaries that do not have public accountability. This month, the IASB continued its redeliberations to develop a new IFRS accounting standard. Andreas, could I turn things over to you to highlight some of the decisions that the IASB made this month?
Sure, Nili. So three aspects were deliberated by the IASB in regard to the subsidiaries project. First, to include in the new accounting standard reduced disclosure requirements for IFRS 1, first-time adoption of international financial reporting standards. Second, to clarify in the new standard, when a subsidiary elects, revokes an election, or is no longer eligible to apply the standard, the subsidiary would not apply the requirements on changes in accounting policies and IAS 8, accounting policies, changes in accounting estimates and errors, and would not be required to present a third statement of financial position. And third, to confirm the proposal to consider amendments to the new standard at the same time the IASB publishes an exposure draft for a new or amended accounting standard.
Thank you, Andreas. Let's move on to the third project we discussed this month, primary financial statements, or PFS, as we like to call it. This project seeks to improve the comparability and transparency of primary financial statements with the focus on the statement of profit or loss. The board is redeliberating its proposals from its exposure draft based on stakeholder feedback and progressing towards a final IFRS accounting standard. If you follow our project closely, you would be aware that the IASB last discussed this project back in September of last year. This is because we have been engaging with stakeholders, particularly to hear feedback on key changes to the proposals in the exposure draft made by the IASB during its redeliberations. And we want to say a very, very sincere thank you to all of the stakeholders who participated in our outreach over the past several months. We know it takes quite a bit of time, but we learned quite a bit from that engagement, and we hope to feed that into our future deliberations. So the IASB started the PFS session with an overview of the key messages received from stakeholders during the outreach, and as a result, identified four topics to be added to its redeliberation plan. These topics include questions about whether to develop application guidance for classifying income and expense from off-balance sheet items, and whether to develop further application guidance related to the rebuttable presumption in the definition of management performance measures. In addition to discussion on feedback, the IASB made a number of decisions on the PFS project. Let's start with the IASB's decisions on disaggregation requirements. Linda, can I turn things over to you?
Of course, Neely, and thank you. This month, the IASB tentatively decided to add an exemption to the general requirement to disaggregate material information. As background, the IASB had decided to specify the disaggregation of some operating expenses included in function line items in the statement of profit or loss. In theory, the general requirement to disaggregate material information would then be overlaid and result in companies needing to provide further disclosure of operating expenses. The IASB's decision to add an exemption avoids this problem. However, it is important to emphasize that no specific disclosure requirements would be affected by this exemption. So in other words, if an IFRS accounting standard contains a requirement to disclose information about a specific operating expense, that requirement would still apply. Our discussion this month also touched on possible further requirements and application guidance relating to the general disaggregation requirements, and this includes adding a requirement that any line items the company presents in its statements of financial performance and statement of financial position are recognized and measured in accordance with IFRS accounting standards, so on the face of the financial statements. In contrast, this requirement would not apply to disaggregation in the notes to the financial statements. The ISB also decided to extend proposals in the exposure draft relating to the label Other to require a company to use this label only if it is unable to find a more informative label.
Thank you, Linda. And Andreas, could you cover the ISB's discussion on other comprehensive income and the statement of cash flows?
Sure, Nili. Let's start with other comprehensive income, or OCI for short. On this topic, the IASB tentatively decided to withdraw the proposal to relabel the two categories of OCI as remeasurements permanently reported outside profit or loss and income and expenses to be included in profit or loss in the future when specific conditions are met. This decision is made in response to stakeholders' concerns that, despite good intentions, these labels are not clear and can be misunderstood. As for the statement of cash flows, you may recall that in the exposure draft, the IASB proposed to make limited changes to remove the options for classification of interest and dividend cash flows. On this topic, the IASB confirmed two proposals related to the classification of interest received as investing activities by a company without a specified main business activity. So basically, we are talking about companies other than, for example, banks. And classification of dividends received, interest paid, and interest received by a company with a specified main business activity. So, as I said, banks, for example. It's a single category in the statement of cash flows, be it operating, investing, or financing activities.
Thank you both. So moving on to another project we discussed this month was supplier finance arrangements. Linda, could you share with us some of the key takeaways from the ISB's discussion on this project?
Oh, my pleasure, Neely. The ISB's discussion on the supplier finance arrangements project was focused on the effective date of its proposed amendments to both IAS 7, Statement of Cash Flows, and IFRS 7, Financial Instruments Disclosures. Now, normally, we provide 18 to 24 months notice before amendments are affected. However, some board members observe the need to provide information to investors sooner rather than later, given the importance of this topic and that most information is expected to be readily available for companies to disclose. We had a very insightful discussion and expect to make decisions in February with a plan to publish the final amendments in Q2 of this year.
Thanks, Linda. Next on my list is the Equity Method Project. Now, this is a research project, so it's in a much earlier stage than the other projects that we've discussed so far. Andreas, could you summarize the ISB's discussion on this project, please?
I'll do my very best, Nili. This month's Equity Method discussion was focused on one application question. That is, how should an investor recognize gains and losses that arise from the sale of a subsidiary to its associate, applying the requirements on IFRS 10 consolidated financial statements and IAS 28 investments in associates and joint ventures. The ISB was first introduced to the application question back in September 2022, when the staff presented four alternatives to addressing the application question. This month, we continued our discussion on the alternatives, and we also heard our stakeholders' feedback to the alternatives identified. What I picked up is our stakeholders are saying, proceed with a solution that is simple to apply. However, the ISB was not asked to make a decision related to the application question just yet. From my recollection, it was an energetic discussion, and it was clear that many ISB members were inclined to narrow the four alternatives to two. In terms of next steps, the ISB will likely make a decision for this application question in the next couple of months, so I'm expecting another good discussion on this topic very soon.
Thank you, Andreas. I agree that the ISB's discussion on this topic is definitely one to watch. Now, before we conclude, I thought I'd share with our listeners, especially those interested in the IFRS accounting taxonomy, that our taxonomy team is making good progress in finalizing the IFRS accounting taxonomy update on the lease liability in a sale and leaseback, as well as non-current liabilities with covenants. This month, the staff shared the feedback we've heard and the board discussed possible changes to the taxonomy modeling in light of that feedback. We also touched on next steps to finalize the taxonomy update, which is expected in March, so keep an eye out for that. And that is this month's podcast. Thank you both, Andreas and Linda, for joining us today. As a reminder, you can catch up on previous episodes of this and the IFRS Interpretations Committee on our website, as well as our YouTube channel and Spotify. For the latest developments, please make sure to subscribe to on our website. And if you like this podcast, please do take some time to rate, review, and subscribe on your preferred podcast player. Thank you, everyone, and stay tuned for our next month's episode.